Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f***?
So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to The Phantom Zone, your one-stop shop for all things nerdy. If you like what you hear today, you can listen to our other episodes on a whole range of nerdy topics now on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, and SoundCloud. My name is Chris Buick, and this week we are here as part of our beautiful ongoing partnership with UK Film Review. I am joined by my friend and fellow nerd, Ian. How are you, Ian?
I'm very good, thank you. I'm up for it today. I may have fallen asleep earlier and didn't mean to, but passed out on the sofa, but I'm fully awake now.
He's with us now. The coffee is in the system.
Yeah.
He is with us for hopefully at least an hour.
Yeah. Halfway through. Ian, wake up.
Some kind of weird narcolepsy. Yep.
Called going to the gym too much.
That's true. I mean, you go to the gym much more than me, which is never. So, you know. And I'm never tired.
There you go. There's a correlation.
There you go. Gym is bad for you. I've said this for years. Like I said, this week we are here as part of our partnership with UK Film Review, where we love to join them once a month to talk about all things nerdy as part of their podcast family, where they have a ton of great shows. We do have our own dedicated channel over on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, all those kind of platforms, anywhere you can get a podcast, really.
Anywhere.
Where we will talk about things like this every week. We're talking about things like Invincible, The Last of Us, other MCU films, you know, DC. Oh, there's all Star Wars.
So much. Star Wars. Star Wars is a big one. What else? So much stuff.
Comic books, video games, all kinds of stuff. So if you like that, all that kind of stuff, then please come and join us. You just look for the Phantom Zone podcast on any platform that you listen to your podcast on. But this week we are here to celebrate 10 years, if you can believe it, since the release of what is arguably still the greatest MCU film to date. Ian is nodding his head. We are, of course, talking about Captain America, The Winter Soldier, which back in 2014 became the ninth film in the MCU, of which there are now 33. It is currently the 21st highest grossing MCU film, but did set the benchmark for what superhero films, not just in the MCU, could be, but could be anywhere. So, it's been 10 years, Ian, which I don't want to dwell on because it makes
it's wild,
me,
isn't it?
It was crazy.
I
don't want to play this game.
Shut your mouth. Shut your mouth. don't you dare say how old you are. Shut your mouth. No, I'll put it this way.
I had bought my first house. And well, I was.
Have you got many houses now?
I have now since moved, but I was just not yet married.
Well, you're doing better than I was then and now. So
you are much younger and fitter than I am. So, you know.
But we'll keep it vague. I don't want to say how much. We don't know. We have said on previous episodes, but you can only find out if you go to our other channel.
Yes.
What ages we are.
You can piece that information together for yourself.
Yeah, I remember seeing this in the cinema. Like, I remember going, and it's wild to think this is 10 years old.
Yeah,
it is insane. Wild. I genuinely, when you told me that we're going to have to do a 10-year anniversary record, I was like expecting something else. And then when I read the word Winter Soldier, I was like, what? Like, no. God, he's wrong. Yeah, I mean, it's a great film. It is a great film. I've just rewatched it in anticipation for this record. And I'm not going to lie to you, I think you are 100% right. I don't think it's arguably the best Avengers MCU film. I think it is the best.
Wow.
Yeah.
So I remember seeing this in the cinema as well. I think this was at a stage, I remember when the first Marvel films came out, Iron Man, Thor 1, etc. And it was all a bit like, oh, they're making superhero films about Marvel characters. The MCU was kind of talked about, but it wasn't like, I think they were kind of just hoping it would work. And I think after the first Avengers movie, it was like, oh yeah, this might actually work, you know, they might actually be able to do this. But I think at this point, when you're looking at phase two, I guess, of the MCU, this is when things really started to take hold as a universe. And like I said, this was the ninth film, so there was quite a bit before that, but there's also been quite a lot after. But I do think that even still, people might talk about, well, you know, you've got to separate them from the Avengers films, you know, the big four. But I don't necessarily think so. I think you could put this up against any of the 33. And and for me, it comes out on top. Yeah. Much like he does in an elevator when he's fighting bad guys.
Iconic scene. Which we'll
get into. But yeah, so my first memories of Winter Soldier are thinking this isn't just... It's not just a superhero film. It's a genre film, which Marvel don't make a lot of. It's a political spy thriller film that just happens to have a superpowered human being in it with a brilliant, who's really good at throwing a shield. But it's such a well done, character driven film, which is, and the best MCU films are that, and they've lost that in recent years. So. Yeah, I think we're both in agreement, which is great, that this is definitely, for us, the best MCU film. And I don't think you'd find anyone who would say, nah, it's definitely not up there, because it definitely has to be. I mean, I looked on a few ranking sites today, and they're all top 10, if not top 5.
I think the one that always gets thrown in as well, obviously Endgame's up there and stuff like that, but I think Endgame is more of a spectacle, etc. I think the one that always gets thrown up with there is Guardians of the Galaxy. I think that's always up there. I think that is also an amazing film. I really like it, but they're very different films.
Yes. Oh, God, yes.
And I think this, for me, having just rewatched it, I really like Guardians of the Galaxy. It's a fun time, and it's a good, entertaining film. This, for me, is like them pushing into being more than just like... I hate saying this because, like, it has become a bit of a buzz conversation, I guess, about superhero films being considered cinema or not, and or artistic. You know, Martin Scorsese said that it's not really films, and Robert Downey Jr. apparently now wants to disown them, but like he can do one for like he can go do one, but this film, I think, arguably hits those lofty realms of like, this is more than just like, in quotations, a superhero film, if you get what I mean. It's more than just a superhero film in quotations, and I feel like when I watch it, it reminds me, as you say, espionage, and you know, James Bond-esque, Mission Impossible comes to mind. You know, those are the good action films, but then it starts to hit those lofty things of, I know some people will be like, that's outrageous to say, but I personally think some of this film's better than some of those films, but some of the Bourne films and things like that, like, I think it is better than, you know, the last Bourne film in particular, but like it's a really it's a really, really good film. And like half an hour in, 30 minutes in, you've already had great character development done in really organic, natural dialogue where people were talking to each other rather than like exposition dumps. And they also have done so much great action in such a short time. That 30-minute mark is where, you know, Nick Fury's getting attacked by Hydra. Things have already kicked off. You know, we're not waiting for stuff to happen. You know, I think it's a really fantastic film, and it does hit that. For me, why it's number one is that it goes into that realm of being more than just, in quotations, superhero films.
Yeah, agree. And it's interesting what you say about Guardians. So I love Guardians. I think it's one of my favorite MCU films. I think for me, three of the most important MCU films are, of course, Iron Man, the first one, which started everything. Guardians, because I think it showed that Marvel could do something else.
Yeah.
Way out there with character. Because we've said before, Iron Man's Captain America's B-team at this point.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
You know, Fantastic Four's and your Spider-Man's, those were the Marvel characters that made money in cinema.
Yeah.
And they made a lot of, and obviously that they were a success, but Guardians are, what, E, F, G level?
Yeah, I don't think Marvel. people not many people Guardians knew who they were.
And I think Guardians proved that Marvel could make good films with any source material if they put the right people in the right places at the right time.
Mm-hmm.
Something I think they've lost in recent times. Toby, our beloved Toby, who couldn't be here today, unfortunately, mentioned he wanted his one thought to be that Winter Soldier makes him pine for the good old days of Marvel.
Yeah, which he's so right. Like, again, having just rewatched it, I was like, what the hell's gone wrong? Like, that's mm-hmm. like by the when I was watching and we got to the iconic scene of the elevator and he zooms in, sees the guy sweating, like figuring out that something's not right here, like, and it twigs, yeah, they're going to attack me. That scene's amazing, and all I could think to myself was, what has gone wrong with the MCU? Because even the film that we thought was all right, which is The Marvels, I actually, on reconsideration, comparing that to this, I'm like, god damn, it's not good. Like, these films are not good anymore.
You compare the Marvels to this, it's nowhere near. You compare Marvels to last 10 films.
Well, interestingly,
it's a bigger fish in that pond.
If you compare it to the two films that came out in Phase 2 initially, Iron Man 3 and Thor: The Dark World, I mean, I know Iron Man 3, some people really like it, some people don't. I fall into the don't category. But for The Dark World, I think we can all agree is pretty bad.
Yeah, agree.
Yeah, and I think Marvel's is probably on that sort of spectrum. So I don't think it's necessarily like, oh, Marvel, you know, they were hitting them out of the park at that point. There were still films that were coming out which middling. Like, the same year, you know, we had Iron Man, not same year, same phase, Iron Man 3, Thor: The Dark World, Winter Soldier, Guardians of the Galaxy, same year. Great year for Marvel, 2014.
They smashed it in 2014.
Yeah, they smashed it. Age of Ultron and Ant-Man. I would argue that, like, two films out of those are great films. Then there is some really bad films in there, and then films that are kind of passing, I think. Mm-hmm. So I totally agree with Toby. Like, I pine for the highs, the high highs that they could hit, because now these faces are not having any films that I'm like, this is great, because you're going to have hit and miss in every phase. Now it's, I feel like pretty much all of them are misses.
Yeah.
Like, I don't really think, like, this current phase is Phase 5.
Phase 5.
Quantumania, miss. Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 4. I know you guys really enjoyed it. Sorry?
Volume 3.
Oh, yeah, Volume 3. Volume 4. I'm skipping ahead.
I was like, this one.
Volume 3. I know you guys really liked it, but I found it really boring. It just didn't do much for me. Like, I just...
Because you hate animals.
It's well known that
well-documented.
I despise animals. Go on to our other channel. No, where you'll hear Ian's hatred. Bro. I just found, like, the first hour of the film totally pointless. Like, totally pointless. And then once the second hour started, I was like, oh, okay, this is now interesting. Marvels, miss. Like, we have got Deadpool and Wolverine coming up, Brave New World and Thunderbolts, but like everything before that, Wakanda Forever, we weren't that infused. Love and Thunder, hated that.
Multiverse of Madness, no.
Boring. No Way Home. Yeah, but then if you think about it, doesn't make any sense. Yeah. Like, it doesn't make any sense.
Yeah, agree. I think, unfortunately, and I could be wrong, I hope I'm wrong, obviously, that Deadpool and Wolverine is going to be a good blip in what will be a very lackluster Phase 5. And hopefully, with rumors being, with, you know, Fantastic Four coming out next year, not obviously that's not a rumor, but what it means for the MCU in the reset, hopefully they're going to get back on track at some point. I do believe the MCU will bounce back. I do believe things will come around again. I just think we said this before, it should have stopped at Endgame for a while.
Yes, it should.
And given us time to go, you know what, I'm ready to get back into the superhero genre. Let DC do some stuff for a while, you know, let them have their time. And, you know,
I think a major thing, sir, is that I also think like the directing quality has like definitely changed. So pulling it back to Winter Soldier, Anthony and Joe Russo, like outstanding quality of director. And they really, 100%. They, you know, I was looking over their career post Avengers, and they haven't really done too much to set the world on fire, you know, since the Avengers Endgame. But the quality of their work prior to that and, you know, what they did in the MCU really stands out. Especially when you compare to now. I'm not saying that these directors are bad directors, but like there is some big names in there, obviously Taika Waititi, but there's a lot of people, and also the lady who did Chloe Zhao.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, but Chloe Zhao, I don't want to be mean, but like Eternals is just one of the most throwaway films in the world. Like,
well, Marvel have literally thrown it away now.
Yeah. Eternals what? I don't know.
Like, I don't remember Eternals what?
Yeah, we never made a film called
Angelina
Eternals.
Jolie was never in the MCU.
Yeah, what are you talking about? I don't even know who Angelina Jolie is. Who's that?
What? No.
But if you go through those names of directors, I don't know. It's like Sam Raimi's another big name, but then it's like
Sam Raimi, such a letdown.
He's not the same director he was probably, you know, a few years ago. He's not had as many high highs. I just don't think there's anybody of the directing quality of the Russo brothers in this list. I think
the only person that I can really point to and say, well, two people, I would argue. I'd say Jon Favreau, who did the first Iron Man, did a really great job because he's the first one. He made it happen. He's the one who brought us Iron Man to the screen and made it a great film. The other one would be Ryan Coogler for the hard work he did.
I was about to say, Ryan Coogler. Yeah, yeah.
I think Black Panther, I know Wakanda Forever, but I feel like Wakanda Forever was hamstrung by very unfortunate circumstances would have meant a different film otherwise. Mm-hmm. But the original Black Panther is... It's a touchstone, not just culturally in so many ways. And for him to have achieved what he did with that, I think he means best for us. But I do completely agree with you.
Especially these recent phases. Yeah, that's what I would say. Like,
I look at Taika Waititi, who did Ragnarok, which was a massive hit, but then Love and Thunder. You've got Sam Raimi, who is a genius in the horror genre, but I feel was hamstrung by the MCU machine. And that is part of the problem. These directors have to work within, which is why Edgar Wright left Ant-Man, and you have Peyton Reed come in, who Ant-Man's fine, but it's not an Edgar Wright film. And you know, you lose great directors because of the way the films have to work. And
just going through these names, it's like Peyton Reed, I'm like, he's all right. I wouldn't be like, oh my god, yeah, it's Peyton Reed. Do you know what I mean? He's not really done anything that I would be like, that's fantastic. Nia DaCosta, again, like, you know, good. The Candyman is an entertaining film, but I don't feel like she's somebody I would be like, you know, put on the realms of the Russo brothers with their directing ability. And I think they really, it's not even the ability, maybe that's not the right word, I'm kind of rambling a bit, but what I mean is like, they really suited this genre. That's what I'm trying to say. And I'm not sure Sam Raimi really suited this genre that the MCU has made. He definitely did a great job with his Spider-Man, but his Spider-Man is very different tone.
Yeah, 100%.
To this. And it's just like a lot of these directors they're bringing in, and that's probably why it didn't work with Chloe Zhao, is that they're tonally very different directors.
Yeah.
And whereas the Russos really clicked, and you can see that in Winter Soldier.
Yeah, it's like you look at Nomadland, which she obviously won the Oscar for, then you look at Eternals. Like, it didn't make sense on paper at the start, and it was always going to be one of those, it's like, how's that going to work when she's not going to, none of them will have creative freedom really in terms of what they want to do. Although I think Marvel maybe have realized that, and when they, and sometimes, and hopefully when Fantastic Four comes around, they're saying, actually, we need to rethink how we do things now, because it's not sustainable anymore. I think, and I think, going back to your point about the Russo brothers, the reason it worked is, so they obviously did Winter Soldier, they did Civil War, and both Infinity War and Endgame. You can see the clear, concise, thought-out story that ties those four films together. Obviously, there's a lot in between, but this film, Winter Soldier, to bring it back, is the starting point for what happens in the MCU going forward. So obviously, you've got... This basically sows the seeds for what happens in Civil War. His relationship with Bucky then becomes such an issue in Civil War that it divides the two camps of Earth's mightiest heroes at a point when their biggest threat to date is coming to annihilate them, essentially, and they're divided. And then the whole thing is about that divide and then coming together. And the character, they're very good at characters, you know, even when they were working back on Arrested Development and Community, they're very good at writing characters that are relatable and characters that you can get behind, no matter what their position is on things. And that's why you can see Tony's version and you can see Steve's version. You can be Team Iron Man, Team Cap, whatever you want, but you can see both sides.
Team Cap,
obviously. but just for the record, Phantom Zone's stance on that. But it's such a great throughput because you wait from Winter Soldier all the way to Endgame. That is what is encapsulating everything. Mm-hmm. And I think it all starts there. And those guys did a fantastic job at it.
Yeah, I totally agree. And like pulling it to Winter Soldier, because we've had a good discussion about the MCU. But I think Winter Soldier is a pivotal point in the MCU for that exact reason. You know, and I think also it showed a tonal shift in the MCU overall. I think prior to the MCU, you know, Winter Soldier, sorry, I think the MCU was still very comic booky, which is great. I'm not like anti that. Iron Man is a classic. The Incredible Hulk is technically in there, so Iron Man 2, 4, Captain America, the first Avenger in the Avengers. I think we can all say like they feel very comic book esque, and that's great. And and especially the first of the first Avengers film, it is very comic esque, and like I love that. This film did something very different with its tone and maturity to take Captain America in a different direction. And you know, it's something that's been explored in the comics, you know, Captain America stepping away from the shield and moving away from it, which obviously happens later in the films, but the seeds of discontent within his mind of the system and the organization are laid here. And comparing it from the first Avenger, Captain America, the first Avenger, to this, I think they really, again, this is maybe why I'm like, they've done something more with this film than just, oh, it's a blockbuster. That's maybe the better term than superhero film. It has something to say, and it's got a commentary in it.
And something that I think is still pertinent today.
Oh, yeah, 100%.
If not more so.
Like, watching it today, before I fell asleep, was really... I woke up and all these Hydra agents were around me like, oh, God! Where are they come from? They're back. It has a lot to say about the idea of security and giving up our freedoms for said security. And, you know, the patriotism that we saw in the first Avenger is really subverted in this film.
Yeah.
Like the ideas of, like, you know, going out, America, we're going to go into the European continent and save Europe in the Second World War. In this one, you know, he's found himself in a world where his patriotism and his love of country is totally different. And there's that great conversation between him and Nick Fury, who, by the way, in this, Samuel L. Jackson, oh,
his best role is Nick Fury. Well, his best film is Nick Fury.
100%. And yeah, especially comparing it now to bloody Secret Wars.
Wow.
Oh, my God. How? What the hell? Anyway, that conversation where he's talking about this new way that he's going to surveil everybody and he's going to prevent things from happening. And he's like, well, I thought we brought the punishment in after somebody breaks the rules. And it's like, well, we don't, you know, is that a risk we're willing to take? Look at the amount of damage, you know, that happened in the first Avengers films, which I think is very much an allegory for, you know, I think everybody writing wise always turns to 9/11 in terms of like a, oh, these films were reflective of that, especially, you know, Spider-Man coming out around about that time. But I think it's still, it's one of the most important events that happened 100%. In modern history.
That's what I was thinking, yeah.
And that, you know, you can definitely see the allegory that what happened in the Avengers, this huge attack on New York that caused mass devastation, and him saying, well, do we have the opportunity to actually stop things from that happening? Mm-hmm. And how much security are you willing to give up? And there's the NSA that obviously is in our world now, and at the time was becoming a big talking point. And I think that's a really, really fascinating conversation and something I wouldn't expect a blockbuster to just do.
Yeah. Yeah. It's definitely more layered than I don't think that people give it credit for, but then you realize at the time, I think on rewatch, you realize, and yeah, it is a post 9/11 era. I understand it was 13 years after the fact. However, given the scale of what happened, that's nothing in the grand scheme of things.
Well, I think it still affects.
It's still
the cultural zeitgeist of American 100%. Identity and world Western, particularly identity, because it really changed everything, really.
Yeah, and you know, the idea of security at home, and you know, I guess preemptiveness in the interest of national security, etc. These were all big conversations that were happening, and this is a film that tackles that. It's obviously Steve's love of his country, even if his country doesn't love him, or it's not the country he knew. And, you know, obviously he's a man out of time, as we know, but he is still, use the term, red, white, and blue all the way through. But he knows right from wrong, and he's not willing to do whatever it takes. He still believes in certain American values, which makes him such a unique and interesting character. Mm-hmm. And there's an interesting line in the film where I think Robert Redford's character says something along the lines of, do you have the courage to do this to Nick Fury as well? And the whole film, and he says, actually, no, I have the courage not to. The courage to not compromise who we are in order to feel safer or to have the bigger stick or whatever it is, you know, just because we can doesn't mean we should. There's so much going on in this film, like you say.
What's really interesting, I could talk about this stuff for ages, because when I was at university, this was, I again, our back lore of our characters of on the podcast, I studied history and American studies as my BA, and then my master's was like philosophy, sociology, and history through the lens of film. And something that I liked to write about a lot was the changing iconography and identity of American society in cinema. And, you know, comparing that with Westerns back in the day, and how superheroes have kind of taken over that genre as the American identity. And Captain America very much is, you know, comparable to the classic Western identity. You know, the John Waynes and those sort of characters of red, white, and blue through and through, that sort of like America. And to place him in this film of that discussion is just perfect choice. It's a perfect choice to have done that. And you know, I don't think it would have worked with an Iron Man or a four, definitely not a four, but like it works so well for him because he is, I guess, the allegory of that new frontiersman, you know, this American identity pushing out into the world, spreading Americanness, what's right and what's wrong. And we see that in the first Avenger film, not the Avengers, but Captain America, the first Avenger. We see that in that film, this idea of pushing out into the world, American exceptionalism is the term. And in this film, they just have completely pulled that apart. They've just, and I love that they did that. And it's such a good choice. Mm-hmm. And what I also really like to pull on what you just said with him not compromising his morals and, you know, he knows what's right and what's wrong and what he's seeing in front of him is not right. In that same conversation with Samuel L. Jackson as Nick Fury, it's such a good, and again, it just shows how good the MCU can be, is when Nick Fury says to him along these lines, it's like, you know, the greatest generation, you guys did some things that were wrong. And then he looks at Nick Fury and says, yeah, we made compromises. You mm-hmm. know, we compromised and some of us can't sleep well at night.
Yeah.
And it's the acknowledgement that, like, because some of those older Western films do not acknowledge this at all, but it's the acknowledgement that, like, America has done things wrong in the past. Mm-hmm. He is that allegory. We did stuff wrong, but this is too far in his eyes. We've gone too far. And it's such a good film as like if you guys are studying and who's listening to this, feel free, if you're in film studies or American studies, write this essay. Take this and write this essay on the changing identity of America through the lens of the MCU, because you've got it. because they give it to you on a platter. They do an amazing job, and then Civil War expands on that as well.
Yeah, you know, you watch American movies, especially very recently after 9/11, and moving on, you notice a shift in. How America is presented. I remember going to see Spider-Man in America with an American audience, and the very end he flies and swings around an American flag at Paul at the very end, and the whole thing just slam cuts mm-hmm. to black on an American flag mm-hmm. and everyone cheered and everyone's like, and then
that's a really interesting one, it because they actually changed
they had to change it.
That film, yeah. And there's a particular scene where the Green Goblin gets attacked by New Yorkers. I think that was very much put in there post 9/11.
Yeah, exactly. And I feel like that really showed a shift in everyone's mentality about America and, you know, who we are as a nation, and, you know, trying to show that, you know, we're strong and we can come back from adversity and, you know, tragedy, etc. There was a lot of that. And even that, you know, I was relatively young at that age, not that mm-hmm. old, but that really resonated with me, that, you know, how cinema can have that kind of it can so reflect humanity at any point. You watch 100%. You watch films from 30s, 40s, 50s, 60s, they are snapshots of who we are as a race, as a civilization at that time.
And especially for the US, because Hollywood is their machine and their, mm-hmm. especially as such a young nation, mm-hmm. Hollywood has always been their, I guess, tool of narrative. You know, I know some literature students will be like, well, they also wrote literature. And I'll be like, yeah, you're right. You're 100% right. But cinema is their export of iconography. And Grant Morrison, who is an amazing writer, wrote a fantastic book, which the name escapes me, but the cover, I can see it, about superheroes being that new iconography. What I think is super interesting as well, just to lead on from your point, Chris, not to jump on it, classic Ian jumping on, but you didn't argue with that. You should have been like, no.
No.
So Spider-Man being that post 9/11 immediate film, there is this identity of like America, we can survive. we can do it, which was super important in that post 9/11 world, where something that is, I mean, prior to it was unfathomable, really. Mm-hmm. Like, there had been some terrorist attacks. I recall that there was a terrorist attack. There was the Unibomber, and there was like these, you know, smaller scale terrorist attacks in the US, but nothing like that. And it was totally unfathomable. Mm-hmm. So that post 9/11 filmography of like, and there's lots of films in there, but let's stay on Spider-Man.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
That idea of like America, we can survive, really drastically changes. Mm-hmm. And Winter Soldier is actually really different. Discussion, because it's saying yes, we did survive, but at what cost?
Yeah, agreed.
You know, we've given up something.
I think part of the message, I think from the Robert Redford character as well, is that kind of mentality from government or authority that says it's not we can survive, it's we need to survive. We need to prove that we are the threat, and we are, and people wouldn't, so people don't do this to us again.
Yeah,
and I think a lot of
that's a great point. I hadn't even thought about that.
A lot of that resonates in cinema as well, where you have establishments who say, no, we need to show that we are the biggest, and we are the ones.
We've got the big stick.
We've got the big stick, so no one comes with us, which is why, and obviously these days you've got so much things going on in the world I don't want to get into, but
no.
But like I say, the films will, films, all media to a point, but films especially, because it's arguably one of the most consumed media, will always show how we are. They reflect society back at us. This is how we are. This is what the world is. Yes, it does it sometimes under the guise of a superhero film, but it's still there. And I think Winter Soldier is fantastic at not just showing this is what America was like at its time, but to a point, this is what the world and America is like, still like today, with, you know, misinformation and security and, you know, all these kind of things going on, that at what point is that too much of a compromise for as a society, for security, for, you know, information, for power? It's so, I wasn't expecting to get into it this much, to be honest, but when you think about it.
I think that is something you have to get into. And I mean, it might be that, you know, this is something I'm very passionate about. And, you know, again, more into our backstory and our lore, but we'll
I hope someone's keeping a wiki of
all this. Their ages, who knows?
You know, Chris, 112?
Maybe. Like, we are going to be, you know, we really enjoy doing these podcasts, and we hope you enjoy listening to them. And like, we have our home channel, I guess is what we should call it, our home page, our home channel, where you can find us and we talk about other things. But we're going to be hopefully doing more and more. And Chris and I have been discussing with the gang, Simone and Toby, having a website. And something we're going to do on there is like write about things and write articles and for your reading pleasure. And why we started the podcast, I guess, or why I like podcasting, is I'm very dyslexic. So talking really helps go through these things. And I'm very passionate about cinema being exactly what you say it is. And like, I think the Winter Soldier, why we've gotten into that such big discussions is because that is what they wanted us to talk about with this film. I think that is the intention. Yeah. And like, I would like to write about this on our page about the changing face of cinema, because something you mentioned there about, I guess, something organically that's coming from the conversation is like how that American identity has changed in these superhero films. And we've got Spider-Man, Winter Soldier, and I would argue that like Logan is an example where it's trying to say we've gone too far. Mm. So like there, you've got this middle point where it's like what we've given up, what we've given to have security. And Logan is a point where it's like, yeah, this is what happens. This is like the end of it all. You know, this is the end of that line where things are derelict now and empty and what's left to protect, because the heroes that we did have all gone. And I think the Winter Soldier is this great middle spot where we're looking in the lens of what have we been willing to give up to get that security. And you're right, it's Robert Redford, isn't it, isn't it? I know Hydra is the big bad and they want to take over the world, but they're more an allegory for the idea of like compromising so much on the idea of protecting at all cost, especially in this film. I know in other films they've done other things, and then, you know, the first one they were, you know, crazy Nazis, and you know, like, you think the Nazis are bad, wait until you see Hydra. Like, that was the first film with Red Skull. I think they did something way better with Hydra in this film, where Robert Redford is almost like, I will do anything for that security, and we'll get rid of people who are a problem for Hydra. But essentially it's saying we're getting rid of people who are a problem for America.
Yeah. Because he says, I'm going to kill 20 million people to save billions. And obviously it's his justification that the is for the greater good, which, you know, is his, like you say, are you willing to compromise 20 million lives to save 9 billion? But at what point do you say, okay, what about next time when it's 100 million lives to save billions? At what point do you
draw the line?
If you don't take a stand like Steve does at some point, and he acknowledges, like you said, in the past, he's been part of decisions that have been compromises, and he's seen the cost of that, and he sees that one compromise will lead to another. So at some point, you need to stand.
The other side of that coin, which I think the film does really well with Nick Fury, is that you've got to do something though, right? You've got to do something, because then things like this can happen.
Yeah.
So it doesn't pose an easy... Steve is not like, oh, you know, we shouldn't have any security. We should be, you know, uncompromising, and we should never do, you know... His perspective is not like the right one, is what I'm trying to say. And with Nick Fury's character in this film, who is, again, God, this is such a good film. Talking about it, it's just God damn, this is a good film.
Yeah.
like everybody is so good in it. Like,
yeah,
everybody's 100%. Performances. Because, you know, Black Widow and Nick Fury in this are very much the sort of like, well, you've got to do something.
Yeah, yeah.
You've got to compromise somewhere. Because otherwise things like in our world, like 9/11, but in their world, you know, the attack on New York, these things can happen.
What do you do if you do nothing? What happens if you do nothing?
Exactly. And it's such a good film, because you're left, especially at the end where the Winter Soldier, which we haven't even got into, the Winter Soldier, the Winter Soldier, Bucky, his best friend, again, an amazing character in this, drags, you know, Captain America in his traditional Captain American suit, who he went and stole because he doesn't want to wear that one anymore.
Yeah.
You know, he wants to be back in that patriotism that we saw in the first film. He's dragged through the mud by the Winter Soldier to get out of the helicopter. His suit's covered in mud, you know, very much a symbolism for what America's been dragged through. And it's like, well, yeah, I mean, where do you... You've got to do something, because otherwise something can happen, you know? And you're left feeling like, where do my morals lie? You know? Where do I draw the line? And that's, if you can leave a film thinking and have thought-provoking films, that is more than just a blockbuster.
Agree. And I think to hopefully segue into talking about the Winter Soldier, Bucky Barnes himself, I think Steve's obviously stance on things, you know, he has his beliefs and that's it. Obviously, going through the films from this point on, his relationship with Bucky, it's evolved so much, but it also means so much to the wider universe. Obviously, most importantly, his friction with Tony. Mm-hmm. Once we realized that Winter Soldier killed his parents.
Spoiler.
I mean, come on.
I don't know, man. Some poor listener's gone, oh, what?
I'm sorry. If anyone hasn't seen Captain America Civil War in the last 8 years, then I'm very sorry. I am genuinely sorry if I spoiled it for anyone.
I'm not. Get bloody watching it. Jeez.
I know. God. I think because at that point you're thinking, well, again, greater good, Steve. You know, is your relationship with Bucky worth the fate of, you know, the team, the universe, the, you know, the Avengers? And for him, it is. And that's why we end up with, you know, the division in the ranks, which, you know, and then especially when Thanos is about to arrive. And then you've got this whole dynamic now between Steve and Tony, which was obviously tense to start with because, you know, it's Tony. So, you know, he causes friction. But that moment, that pivotal moment, that relationship is so much the crux of everything that is at stake in the later films. And I think, again, go back to the Russos, they do so well at keeping the characters authentic, consistent. You understand why he sticks with Bucky, even if, you know, if you are Team Tony, you're wrong.
Yeah, I respect it.
You're wrong. But we respect it.
He got too bent on personal rather than the bigger picture. That's what went wrong.
But you can see,
but you get it, but you
can get it. You can see where it comes from. His parents' death is his whole. The whole reason he is
when he says, "But he killed my mum."
Even when he turns and says, "Did you know?" And then and you're like, and he doesn't say anything. You're like, oh my god, it's like,
oh Steve,
it's like the best episode of EastEnders.
Yeah, do, right there. Like, that's the cut.
But his unflinching belief in what he stands for, Steve, which obviously we see part of in First Avenger, but really comes to the fold here in his relationship with Bucky is
so good.
So good.
And I just to not that we're going to talk about Civil War, but that scene actually parallels a bit of this Steve in this film, where he's like, did you know? And he doesn't say anything. I think that shows again that sort of compromising in morals. Because like that's a big thing not to tell people.
Yeah, and
that's a big thing to compromise on because it's your friend. And you know, like the Russos do such a good job with those character studies, you know, and this film, you're totally right. The relationship between Steve and Bucky has such a widespread consequence for the MCU. I think their relationship is a really fascinating one just for film. You know, how far are you willing to go for your friend? I love that when he's like, I'm with you till the end, all the way. That's an amazing, like, it's just great acting and great writing, which, you know, comparing this, I don't want to go and drag in the current MCU, but when you compare this to Falcon and the Winter Soldier, Falcon and the Winter Soldier. I it's maybe because I hadn't watched this in so long, and I was like, I quite liked Falcon and the Winter Soldier when it came out. And I'm not saying it's bad,
no,
because I really like Anthony Mackie and
Sebastian Stan's
chemistry, and also the actor who played Baron Mordo. Like, just really good chemistry there. But like there's just something missing in like the dialogue and the story of that. Comparing it to this, it has, Toby's hit the nail on the head that it's just, you just watch this and you get sad because everything else has just been so like, oh
yeah. You like Bucky, watching Bucky without Cap is hard, because I think obviously Cap gets such a great send off at the end of Endgame, and I think
becoming Joe Biden.
Becoming Joe Biden. Yeah.
It's like, oh, is that
President America?
It's Joe Biden.
Oh. It's Joe Biden. Cameo. But yeah, it's hard. It's easy to look back and go, oh yeah, things were great back then. You know, obviously the MCU wasn't perfect back in the day.
No.
But
it has higher highs.
It has higher highs, and I think we went so long so far for so long with so many characters that we're now in a point where we've been asked to basically just go, right, reset. We're going to do some more different stuff. Mm. And it's hard. I agree. Falcon Winter Soldier was a good show. Yeah. You know, I enjoyed it. It had a groundness to it, obviously, because they're not like, they can't fly, they can't do magic, etc. Mm-hmm. And it was one of those kind of espionage thriller type things that I guess tries to emulate some of what makes Winter Soldier still great, but it just doesn't have the same magic.
It just doesn't, does it? And like, it is why it's a good one to parallel is because it is really trying to be like this. Mm-hmm. It is really trying to have that espionage and like, but it just doesn't work like this. And I think it's because a mixture of, I don't know what it's trying to say. Mm-hmm. Like, and I'm not saying everything I watch and consume needs to have a commentary about society and life and blah, blah. But why Winter Soldier hits those highs, because I think it does do that. Whereas Falcon Winter Soldier, I don't know, it was very throwaway. It was really, really throwaway. And I feel like they were trying to make Sebastian Stan's Winter Soldier kind of just fill the void of Captain America's Man Out of Time. Mm-hmm. They were trying to have him be that guy, because he is that guy as well. But it just doesn't click like it does for Captain America. And they really should be doing something else with the Winter Soldier, I feel.
What I do like, what one of the things I did really like about Falcon and the Winter Soldier is obviously they get Wyatt Russell's character, John, to, he's the new Captain America, because obviously they need one. And again, yes, America needs a Captain America. Mm-hmm. It's very much back to our discussion before, but America needs this thing to prove that it's still got stuff going for it, so they need a new Captain America. But he's a completely different person to Steve. He is not what embodies Captain America. Mm-hmm. And Bucky obviously doesn't like that, and it's such an interesting parallel for Bucky to have that relationship with Steve and then have this relationship with someone who's basically being paraded around as the new Steve Rogers, and he knows he's nothing like him. And I love that person, that personal connect, perspective from Bucky, to see that and to be immediately like, no, you've completely missed the point of what makes Captain America Captain America.
Yeah, I mean, I'm, because we love Winter Soldier so much, this is going to be quite good to have a dissenting opinion. I completely agree with you, but I actually had a problem that they didn't do it well. Yeah, and I just felt by the end when they're like joking around after defeating the villain team, I just was like, that's just really undermines that he's just murdered somebody with, you know, Captain America's shield. You know, I actually got very frustrated by that, because I felt like one of the major issues with that show is that it falls short with what it's trying to say. And like, as I was saying before, like, what's it trying to say? You know, it could really, really, really delve into racism in the US and how, and it just doesn't get it. And they had the introduction of, I've forgotten his name. But the Captain America that everybody, you know, forgets about because it was American experimentation on, you know, black soldiers to try and create a Captain America. And they just erased him from history because of him being black. But because they didn't fully go, they didn't do it. I just felt like it just felt very hollow rather than going the full length of it. And that's the same thing with that relationship you're talking about, which they do so well in this film, because they really just don't go, oh, we need to hold back on the allegories. Yeah. We need to hold back on the symbolism. In this film, they do not hold back. They just go, yep, Winter Soldier is about the American, you know, compromising on its security, the big stick mentality, etc. In Falcon Winter Soldier, it's like, yeah, we kind of want to talk about racism in the USA, but we're not going to do it fully.
It's quite a volatile time at the minute. We probably shouldn't stoke any fires. Like, well, no, you've got if you're in film, you know, these are the kind of things that film can do. It can spark conversations. It can say uncomfortable things. And if Marvel aren't willing to take those steps to do that, because they set it up and then it just kind of go like, yeah, but we're going to move over to the fun Marvel stuff, so don't worry about it. Don't worry, we're not going to get
that
too
was the
heavy.
Annoying thing, it's like the first half, same with WandaVision, but we won't get into that, but it's like the first half of the show I was like, oh, okay, great, all right, okay, they're really going to do something with this. Okay, then he kills a guy with Captain America's shield. I'm like, okay, all right, this is. And then everything from that point on in the show, they just dial it right back. They're like, no, actually, we went too far. You shouldn't have done that. Yeah. We, not the character, we as the writers went too far. And I'm like, no, you didn't go far enough. You could have kept pushing.
Yeah.
And it's a shame, because I feel like why we love Winter Soldier so much is because it's uncompromising. It doesn't go, oh, we need to sugarcoat this because it's the MCU. And it's weird watching this film now. It's really weird watching it now, because I'm like, God damn.
It really is. And you think,
it's so strange.
And when you think where it goes from here, you're like, wow. It's crazy when you think it's had another, 24 films after it in the space of 10 years.
Yeah, it's crazy. And it's such a grounded film as well.
Like, yeah.
It's cinematography is really grounded. Its action sequences are phenomenal. Mm-hmm. Like, phenomenal. And I'm not saying I don't like Endgame and blah, 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 because I love those films. Mm-hmm. But there's something really great about the human grounded level of this
film. 100%. Yeah, 100%. The fight scenes are great. I want to finish up with some great moments. And because we're talking about the fight scenes, obviously we have to speak about the elevator scene.
Iconic.
Now, before we start, does anyone want to get out?
Iconic.
It's such a great line. It's such a great moment. It's
just little things in that scene as well. As we mentioned before, the cinematography zooming in on the guy sweating.
Yeah.
Steve kind of putting two and two together.
Because we know.
Yeah.
We know, but Steve doesn't, but he sees it.
But you know what? Rewatching it, you know, when I first watched it, I wouldn't have known, because we know it now. But before that, we don't know that, you know, Crossbones is, you know, a villain yet. You know, we don't know. So when you see them holding the thing, you're like, oh, no. And the sweat, and you're like, oh, like, it's, they build the tension in that scene. It's iconic. That is maybe one of the best scenes in all of the MCU.
And I think that may be one of the best lines in the MCU. Yeah. I think, you know, I've said that in a few meetings with
and everyone's like, what the hell is this?
Yeah, doing? I've said people I know who will get the reference, by the way, because
they do know. People at your work just think you're like this ruthless person then.
Yeah, I was like, anyone, before we get started, does anyone want to get out?
And they're like, actually, I'm gonna hand my notice in tomorrow. I do that now?
Yeah, I was like, to be fair, this could have been an email, this meeting. I want to get out.
Because I want to leave.
I want to leave. It's like, do we have to do this?
Another great scene, I think, that I just am like, amazing. I alluded to it before, but I think it just makes me sad still, is Nick Fury being chased by the Hydra agents. Mm. The whole car chase scene, him like telling the computer, showing off his skills, you know, shooting through the glass, all of that stuff, so good. It's the first introduction of the Winter Soldier as well, where he flips the car, steps aside, amazing. So a brilliant car chase scene. But all it made me think was, what the hell happened in Secret Invasion? The hell happened to our Nick Fury?
I mean, like we said before, this is the pinnacle of Nick Fury's appearance in the MCU. But yeah, I think this film does more for Natasha than Black Widow does, than any other film does as well. I think this film services all its characters very well. Obviously, we get introduced to Falcon, to Anthony Mackie.
Who's great in this.
Like... And it has that scene where, when it first came out, obviously, we didn't realize the significance it would have later on, but the on your left scene, which is great.
That was so nice when it was the first part of the film. I forgot that was the beginning of the film. And I smiled left, like...
And you think this is great. And then I never thought years later those three words would make me cry when I saw it out of an Endgame. Honestly, but that, again, proves how good the Russos were at thinking.
Yeah.
Thinking ahead, connecting everything. They've made Steve consistent throughout, which is something I don't think Thor did. Nope. I don't think Tony did. Tony to a degree did.
I think Iron Man 3 kind of just is a bit...
I feel like Tony anomaly, Tony was on a tighter arc than Thor. Thor's kind of lost his way a lot, you know.
Well, Thor's just an idiot now. Well, doesn't make any sense.
He wasn't... He was just a guy... At the start, he's just a guy who, you know, doesn't know Earth and doesn't know everything else, but he's just become such, you know, a dumb, fun person, but he's not really, he's just become a caricature of himself.
And I think the best Thor was Infinity War Thor. I think people misunderstood the Thor in Endgame. They were all like, oh, he's really funny. And it's like, no, the man's got like PTSD.
Yeah, he's seriously totally messed up.
And Taika Waititi... Instead of like, I think they just were like, oh, everybody loved Thor in Endgame, just do that. And that's why it's bad now.
Yeah, agree. And obviously, Hulk, Black Widow, Hawkeye, they've never really, you know, which is why, and this was a question that I guess kind of end on, was Cap, the best Avenger.
Yes.
100%.
I people call me boring, but people are wrong. Because they don't understand these characters, and I'm going to be that snob. I'm going to be like, you didn't bloody understand it, but I did. I love Superman. He is one of my favorite comic book characters of all time, and I think people really misunderstand Superman because in film representations, nobody's actually really clicked and got it. This Captain America, in many ways, the film Captain America, kind of is how Superman is in the comics. You know, there's more. He's not, you know. This idea of America, we're the best. He is more like, I'm more for people. I want to protect, you know, humanity and what's right, and you know that idea. And I do think Captain America, especially in film, because in the comics, Captain America, I like Captain America in the comics, but he's less like this. I think they did a really in film. He is the best Avenger, and he is my. I think he had the best trilogy. As well,
100%, definitely. I think First Avenger, Winter Soldier, and Civil War are, you know, like as a character arc for your three films. You obviously Iron Man has three, and Thor's got four now, but they're a bit fast and loose in quality. Whereas the three for Cap are tight, and he is the core of the group. He's the core of the MCU in terms of the wider picture. And I think that Chris Evans is fantastic, brilliant casting. Probably couldn't have picked anyone better.
Great actor.
As much as I was, again, spoilers for Endgame if no one's seen it. Tony dying was heartbreaking, but Cap leaving, I feel, hit me more because...
Me too.
Him, Joe Biden, and walking off into the sunset was... It filled me with happiness and sadness because obviously he then ends up with Peggy and that's all he ever wanted. He wanted his dance and he's come full circle. I think his story in the MCU is beautiful.
We didn't even mention Peggy in this film.
Oh my God. I know. We could get into Peggy another time. But
you are 100% right. Like that him going was just so emotional for me as well. I like Iron Man dying and Tony dying is like, I think... what's the word? It makes sense. It's thematic. It rhymes. To quote,
someone had to go.
Yeah, so. And it makes sense. It's the first guy.
Yeah, yeah,
it makes sense, and it totally makes sense for Tony's arc, you know, from the first film where he's an arms dealer to now willing to die for the world.
Mm-hmm. But and again, there's another moment in Endgame which shows that the Russos don't just understand their character of Steve and Captain America. Mm. They understand the characters, because his final words as Iron Man is I am Iron Man, which is the last words he said at the very first film.
Yeah.
And it's like, you just get it.
Goosebumps from that film.
I need to rewatch the MCU. Yeah.
I totally agree with you with him, you know, Joe Bidening. You know, it's
a verb now.
It's now a verb. It's very emotional. And it just feels like, I don't know, I don't want to say it is more emotional than Iron Man's. They're both emotional. If you love Iron Man, I'm there with you. I love it too. But like, there's just something about, because I thought they were going to kill Captain America. Because Captain America does die in the comics. Spoilers. Many times. So many times. But everyone's died in comic books. The only characters to stay dead, though, Uncle Ben and... Well, no, Batman's parents are no longer dead as well.
Yeah, true.
Multiverses. Yeah. But the him not dying and finally getting what he wanted in life was just such a like beautiful way to end his story. And with this film as well, in the midst of that, it's just such a good... He's the best character. The best character. Mm-hmm. It's just... Totally agree with you. He's the best one. And maybe it's probably maybe what the films now are lacking, like a through line heart character that we love and we want to follow, whether that be Tony or Steve. We don't really have that anymore, do we?
I feel like we've lost them. We've lost, and the only other options I feel like the people would have clung to are the Guardians, which is now gone.
Yeah.
I don't feel like Doctor Strange.
Ooh, totally not.
I don't even feel like Spider-Man is doing that. I feel like Fantastic Four has that potential.
It does. I think the problem with Spider-Man... Well, this is a bigger conversation. We will close up soon. But the problem with what we've lost and what we have is that, like, Spider-Man's great. We all love Spider-Man. But, like, I think they did a disservice maybe... having him so closely connected to Tony, because now in the MCU we'll have to see where it goes, because there's potential there, but it's not happened yet. Mm-hmm. And I totally agree with you that the Fantastic Four is kind of what we have to wait for. I think maybe, you know, in hindsight they should have just stopped, as we said, and picked up with Fantastic Four.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, agree. Well,
just one last thing, sorry to interrupt. For people who do want to read the Grant Morrison book, it's called Super Gods.
Yes. Yeah. You have recommended it many times.
Fantastic book.
I even bought it and still haven't read it. So I don't read it. So I will. I will. 100%. So
that's now in the lore as well.
Bought but not read. Like many books.
Yeah.
I'm addicted to the covers, man. The covers look great. I buy it and go, oh, it's great.
Mate, you don't have to tell me.
I don't even have it on camera. It's not like I'm buying it to show off.
Yeah, you've spent money on it and you're like, oh, God.
I don't even have that, you know, that bookshelf wealth thing that's going on at the minute. But yes, absolutely, you should go read that book. You've mentioned it many, and from what I've heard, it will basically echoes a lot of what we've said and what you've said, and is a really good read about all that kind of iconography in cinema, especially within the superhero genre. He's a very good writer. He's obviously very much knows what he's talking about. But unfortunately, I think that's all the time we have for this week. Thank you, as always, Ian, for joining me. It's been a really, really deep discussion for this one.
Yeah, pleasure. I've really enjoyed it.
Yeah.
I hope the listeners have too. I hope they didn't stop, get our average rate listening to like 30 minutes. Like, nah,
I'm all right.
Chris spoiled it for me. God damn.
Sorry. But yeah, of course, thank you to all you wonderful listeners. We do appreciate every single one of you. Remember, we are here this week as part of our lovely relationship with UK Film Review, where you can go and listen to us and a whole bunch of other shows, including UK Film Club, which covers major releases as well as indie films. You've got Gay Actually, which is hosted by the wonderful Amber and Joyce, who we were very fortunate to guest star on their podcast a few weeks ago. They talk about all things LGBTQ+, etc. And obviously you've got Scream Test as well, Rachel, for all you horror fans. But if you like more of what we have to say, then you can find us on our own dedicated channel on at the Phantom Zone Podcast. You can find it wherever you get podcasts, Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, SoundCloud, anywhere. You can also find us on Instagram at the Phantom Zone Podcast, and you can email us at thephantomzonepodcast@gmail.com.
That is FANTOM.
That is correct. FAN.
I have had this conversation with people where I'll say, oh, we're called the Phantom Zone, and they'll be like, they'll look us up and then they can't find us, or they find the Superman Phantom Zone, which is what the reference is.
Yeah, that's true.
But it's FAN, just FAN.
FANTOM Zone. Perfect. Thank you, Ian. But for now, until next time, thank you for listening, and we'll see you again soon. Goodbye.
Bye. The Nazis, they're everywhere.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.